My name is John Copsey. I have lived in Maldon all my life, and my parents and myself ran the fish and chip shop in Maldon and Heybridge, and we ended up with a restaurant as well.
So John, your name is, well, you're very well known in the fish business.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a bit more detail of how it all started?
Yes, I have clear memories. It was 1956, I was 6 years old. We moved from a brand new modern house at the time to 199 High Street, and that was on the corner of North Street, which is opposite the Ship and Anchor, which is now the Black Rabbit. And we moved there and we lived over the shop, and it was a complete change for the whole family, and particularly my parents. They hadn't been in retail. My father was a motor engineer for SADS, and my mother was a housewife at the time.
That was a very big change for them, wasn't it? Learning a new skill.
Yes.
And all the family moving in. How many in your family?
I have one brother, David, two sisters, the oldest being Sue, and Jane, the youngest. I'm the third.
And do you remember that it was a very big change, or did you just, you know, go with the flow?
For myself and Jane, was perhaps less of a change family-wise. My brother and sister, David and Sue, they noticed it mostly, because it's a complete change to the family. The time that given to the business by my parents was very demanding, but we took it. I have fond memories of that time. I enjoyed probably been in the business and around the business, and I always found it interesting.
And was the fish and chip shop a success from the start?
When my parents took the business over, I don't think the business was at its best, but they took it over with their enthusiasm and their application of various items that we sold. They did very well, and it did become very successful, and financially proved very a good investment.
And as a boy, do you remember helping in the shop?
Yes, I suppose I was always interested and helped, and then when I was big enough, which is around about 9 or 10, my first job was to prepare potatoes. They came in 100-weight sacks, 100-weight I could not lift, so they had to be tipped into buckets, which then you tipped into the machine, and then we took it was hard work for physically. I can remember my first 100-weight sack I picked up at 11. That was my goal.
But overall, you enjoyed being involved.
I enjoyed every aspect of the business, apart from the mornings when I was about 11 or 12 and I helped Dad with the fish. You cannot say it's good fun on a very cold morning scraping the ice off the top of the fish boxes, but it had to be done.
So you mentioned fish boxes. Where did your fish come from?
Maldon had the railway station then, and it used to come from Billingsgate and Grimsby, and probably there was a daily delivery if you wanted it, but probably every other day we would go down for fresh deliveries, and so we would pick it up from the station in our van and bring it up. Mm. And so that's how it got to us.
And apart from the obvious fish and chips, were you cooking anything else at the time?
We developed a varied menu, mainly because in the summer we would get a big influx of coaches onto the promenade, and they would be predominantly from London and to meet the demand for the family, we introduced chicken, pies, sausages, fish cakes, various things, so that there was something there for everybody's taste within the family.
Was that quite innovative at the time? Quite an unusual thing?
That's a good question. I didn't particularly think it was done to be innovative, but looking back, yes. Mm. But I think, I don't think there were many places that supplied the very menu we did.
The variety.
Yeah.
Mm. So you remember there being a lot of visitors and tourists, if you like, coming to Maldon, particularly in the summer and at weekends.
Yes.
And of course, where your shop was, the lower end of the high street, from the Prom Park, you presumably got the majority of visitors coming into your shop.
Yes, it was an absolute... you couldn't have had a... it was a prime site, and you could... it was all most of the time, but during Carnival week, it was the whole week was absolutely awash with visitors. Mm. Something on every day, culminating on the Saturday of the Carnival procession, and then with the fun fair and the fireworks on the promenade. There were thousands. The actual streets were lined completely, top to bottom. And when people left at tea times, lunch time, or in here, they just swarmed across the road from the promenade. Obviously, not everybody came to our shop, but a huge amount. We had queues. It was fun, it was a buzz, hard work, but something I doubt will ever be repeated now.
You must have all been exhausted at the end, your parents particularly.
Yes, I think it was a wonderful tiredness to be busy, to be doing something you love, and actually be successful is a wonderful tiredness, which in my life I've been the other side and been exhausted and not been successful. So yes.
John, I believe when you were about 10, there was an incident regarding your father's car.
Yeah, yes. I just preempt there. My father's car was stolen, but we were living in an era where children should be seen and not heard. And with that in mind, my dad being ex-army, he was very strict. He's talking to somebody in the shop, and he parked his car, leaving the keys in the car outside the premises in North Street. And I saw his car go down the road. I then put two and two together. Dad's in the shop with his friend, so it wasn't him driving it. I had several attempts and very nearly got a clip of the ears to interject and say, Dad, I think your car's stolen. Eventually, I got that through to him, and then panic set in. Out the door, run down the road just in time to see the car come up Church Street and up the High Street. Subsequently, the police were called, and they did eventually get the culprits, and I think they call it the Red Letter Box Corner at Mundon, but Believe it or not, in those days, they had thrown Dad's keys away, and they were actually taken to court for stealing his keys. It was just as much a crime and easier to take them to court than the car. So they were actually sent to prison, I think, because they'd done other things.
Right. Yeah.
So, yes, that was one.
Well done to an observant son.
Yes, I'm not sure if I got thanked for that or not, but.
And coming back to the premises, you told me that there was in the summers a marquee outside.
Yes, the upstairs when we moved. Into a house in Fanbridge Road, and that left the upstairs of the shop empty, which was turned into a cafe. It was very popular, and we had a vacant plot of land adjoining the shop, which in the summer my father would put a marquee on, and that became extremely popular with customers. And with the help of a wartime friend from Leeds, they'd come down every bank holiday, and they would help out, and extra staff, children. And it would be remiss of me to just mention one person who helped and was very good to me as a child. She stayed with us all her life. It was a woman called Mrs. French.
Mrs. French, right. Mm-hmm. Friend of the family?
She was, as I've said, an incredible person to me, but for the business. And she used to cook meals for our lunches just so we had something different. And one day, my parents decided that we should have steak and kidney pudding. And I can remember that we stood in the shop. There was a huge explosion, and we went out to find steak and kidney pudding over the walls. And what it was a steak and kidney pudding that was in a tin. And she could cook one from scratch, but in a tin, she just put it in a saucepan with some water. That had boiled dry, and she hadn't pierced the top of the tin, so the actual top of the tin was inverted pyramid shape into our ceiling, and the pudding was all over the... And she said, her words were, "My God, what's happened?" So that's a very fond memory of Mrs. French, but she was a lovely disposition.
Yeah, she was a real treasure.
Yes,
the
yes.
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I think you joined the business, you told me, full-time when you were 19.
That's correct.
So were you working with your parents, or were you gradually taking over yourself?
No, in so much as I joined full-time, and that was, I'm going to refer to it as the Malden shop.
Yeah.
We had running as well the Haybridge shop. My father... who he wasn't particularly well, he'd had a heart attack. He then took on running part-time Haybridge, and I went in with my mother to run the Malden shop.
Can I just ask you, where was the Haybridge shop for people that don't remember?
Yes. So if you go through... If you go down the causeway to the roundabout and you take a turning, I think it's the second turning off of the roundabout, you will go past the church and the Haybridge Church. And if you continue along, you come the main road, there's a bridge over the canal. Just prior to that, there would be a turning. There is a turning to the right, and on the top of that it's called Hall Road. And to the right there, right at the very top, it was 1 and 2, I think, Hall Road. And we owned that property. So my parents, that's where my father spent his time.
So they were, they had been already expanding the business in buying that second property.
Yes.
They had running two fish and chip businesses. Yes, the, I think, at the same time.
I think it would be fair to say that the reason for keeping the property acquiring the property in Heybridge was Malden was totally leased. Mm. And when I joined at 19, I had made it clear to my parents that there's no way I wished to continue with a lease. My future would be to buy the shop and maintain my future. That's how I saw it. So we knew the lease would be coming to an end. So the view was, and as it did work out, if we didn't acquire the property in Malden, we had got the property in Heybridge to fall back to. Mm. So that was the plan.
Yeah. So what happened when the lease ended?
We tried to buy the... Mrs. Randall, who was the owner, her brother-in-law was John Gossett from Quest Motors, and I had to deal with him. And he's trying to do the best. He wanted the top price he could get, which was overinflated. And I could not agree the price with him. Everything was amicable. We didn't fall out. And he did grant us, I think, 6 months. It was an extension to the lease so that we could move the business down to Heybridge. Mm. So that's why we came out.
And once you fully moved to Heybridge, were you running the business then?
Yes. I think at the time, just prior to that, it wasn't a clash. I had a view to business along with my wife, Chris. We knew how we wanted to go forward. And I think, I won't say, you can't have two bosses. And Mum stepped back. She was quite accepted it as bestly as she could. We weren't at loggerheads. So I ran the business to the tail end of Malden. And when we went down to Heybridge, it was me, and I will say, the support of Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I could not have done anything that I have done without her support.
Of course, of course. Now, while you were running the Heybridge business, there were some events, some dramas. So, I believe there was a fire on a boat. Was that while you were in Heybridge?
There was a...
Can you tell us?
Well, it was through the... What do you call them? The services? The fire
service? Emergency.
Yeah, the emergency services locally were called to a fire that had occurred on it's not just a small boat. It was a ship down in the estuary had caught fire. It's reported in the paper at the time. And it was a major incident, and I believe it was a Monday, but we were called by somebody that I knew, Chris, a woman called Tilly Pink, mm-hmm. and she was prominent at the time in
WRVS.
They were asked, could they supply, I think it was nearly 200 meals, and she said she used to come into our premises, and she phoned me up. She said, John, explain what was needed. She said, can you do anything? I said, if you give me about 2.5 hours, I'll have you 200 meals. And she said, really? I said, yes. And needless to say, I made that statement. I was fairly confident I could do it, but I wasn't confident about how long. But we did achieve that, and very proud we were of doing it, weren't we? Helped them out.
Mm. Mm.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Good. So. And on the subject of fires, was there another one?
Yeah, there was another one, but that was closer to home. Right. We And this was during the time we did have the Morden shop. And we heard my dad, nothing to do with this, but I was attuned to the fire services and and we heard the fire alarm go off and the fire engine go down the high street. You could hear it in at that time. And we wondered where it was. And we could see some smoke down in Haybridge. And the shortened version is my father had turned a pan on and forgotten to turn it off, and it caught a light.
Oh.
And and it did actually turn the... It burnt the shop, gutted it totally.
The whole of the Haybridge shop?
Yeah, and that was... that was in 1970.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yeah, so just as a little antidote to that, my father used to be a fireman, and he saw the fire was out of control. He just bought a brand new set of scales because he sold some wet fish down there. So the two things he took with him as he went out the door was the till drawer and this brand new set of scales, one under each of the arm, and then he just went out and obviously it was his mates that came down to put the fire out, and they couldn't believe what he'd done.
That was a disaster.
Yes.
It all had to be rebuilt.
Yes, the structure was all right, it just had to be refitted.
Right, okay.
And it was, it was insured, and needless to say, it worked out to be refitted and reopened. Yes.
Luckily, you still had the high street premises.
Yes, that was probably when we were starting to negotiate the end of the lease. So that.
Going back in time a little bit, I'm afraid. Talking about the high street shop, I believe you had went on deliveries in your van.
Oh, good Lord! Yeah, yeah. Well, we. That's going back a reasonable length of time, because in building the business up, as a lot of people in retail did those days, particularly with food, we had a van, and my father and mother thought it would be a good idea to do a delivery round, not being taken on before. So my father acquired an oven that went into the back of the van that would keep the fish and chips warm, and around was built up. We went to farms, we went to houses, and it worked on the basis of leaflets to start with, and then people would place an order, and it worked. You could do their order up and deliver it to their door. And this went on for a few years. I mentioned earlier my brother David, and he, when he could drive, that was where he first started to drive. He went with my mother, and he would drive down the farm lanes to practice. And then when he could drive, he used to do the round, but his heart was not particularly in it. And it went on for a few years, and then I think the shop got busier. He wasn't that interested, so it finished. But it served a purpose.
It was good while it lasted.
Yes, served a purpose.
Okay, let's jump on again. When you're running the Haybridge shop, and you opened a restaurant.
Yes, yeah.
A very successful, I'm told, restaurant.
Yes, to this day, people say we miss the shop. Probably nowhere near as much as Chris and I do. But all my life, fish and chips, the worst thing you can do with fish and chips is wrap them up. So
interesting.
This is my opinion.
Yeah.
The nicest thing to do is to be able to prepare it, put it on a plate, and put it in front of somebody. And that was always my ultimate goal. And with that dream and the right partner, we were able to acquire plot of ground next to our Heybridge shop. And it was a huge commitment, both physically and mentally and financially. Mm. But we went about it proven in the right way, and we opened in 1990, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is when we opened our shop. I'll interject there about the restaurant. I mentioned I couldn't have done it without Chris, but it would be very remiss of me not to mention, in particular, my brother-in-law, Trevor Smith, without whose help I don't think we would have got it off the ground. So a tremendous amount of thanks needs to go to him, and then in particular my two sisters, Sue and Jane, who constantly supported me throughout. There's a perhaps a complete change, but by talking about the restaurant, and it brought in different supplies. We had the menu, and I cooked different fish that I would cook for the takeaway, and we fortunately, through Mr. Beecham closing our railway station, we had our fish then delivered by road, which personally I found was better. We could have order and it would be with us the next day, but we had a walk-in fridge. The deliveries came into our fridge, and that saved us the time of going to get them.
So did they deliver at night, John?
Early morning. Yes. So
you weren't
necessarily
there.
No, we didn't have to be there. It was. I'd like to bring in a minute about the different fish and the different how it came in. But there's one thing that you just reminded me of, is they delivered in the night. Sometimes they would be a little early. And I was down in Heybridge and I was cleaning up the shed, and I'd just gone out to check everything at the back door, and we had a car park at the side of the restaurant. And I heard this lorry, looking back, pulled onto our car park rather sharply. And I had met the driver, and I said to him, "Oh, you're early today, tonight." He ran straight by me, jumped up on our wall, jumped over the fence, and the other side was the old river, the creek. And the next thing I knew, there was a blue light, and the policeman, he came down, he said, "Excuse me, mate," he said, "what's the other side of the fence?" I said, "There's only reeds, you'll be all right," he said. He looked over, he said, "I'm not going over there." Next thing I know, there's a police helicopter, and this man, when I went into the car park, had stolen a low loader with a digger on the back. I never did know whether they caught him or not, but they certainly had everything out in force to try and catch him. That was something that has just come to mind by what was the joys of having a business.
So it wasn't your fish delivery after
No. But going back to the deliveries, by having road deliveries, it opened up a large new supply of merchants, Lowestoft, Newlyn, Brixham, and etc., where we could buy from them English fish, English cod, and in season the plaice, the soles, etc. And it gave us a wonderful supply of really top quality fish, which probably would have only been available if you took the trouble to go to those places and buy it. So it wasn't all a downside to the change of delivery.
Obviously, the quality of fish was a priority. Do you think that's what made your restaurant such a success?
Yeah, I think without a doubt, it contributed greatly. I'm a great believer that at the end of the day, everything has to tick the boxes, and that is one of them. It contributed. The team we had working with us contributed. The way the restaurant was set up, and I never thought about it, but I've made a statement to many people. If you have six women, and you give them the same ingredients to make a sponge, of the six sponges, probably three will be really good and one will stand out, and that's down to how it is made and how they cook. And it might sound, but that is my belief. And with the fresh fish, I didn't realise at the time, and I knew how to cook it.
Was it just you doing the cooking?
No, we got that busy I had to, not had to, going back at North Street, my parents trained a young man, and my father taught him to fry. He then went to work as an engineer. He came back. I believe at one time he did work for George Wheeler. But he, at the time of me needing a manager, he was working at, would it have been?
Hoffman's.
And we came to an arrangement, and he agreed to come and work for us when we opened the restaurant. And his name was Norman Anderson, and he attributed a great deal of help setting up the restaurant and the tables. And I was very grateful for his help and assistance through that period of time. And he remained with us until we sold the business.
But you couldn't have done it all, John. Cooking for the restaurant, cooking for the takeaway.
That's a true statement, but if you watch some of the cooking programs on the television, in a restaurant, when you're cooking, if you are organized, it's amazing what you can do and what you can take on. From my point of view, I had a mindset that when I was busy, I would walk along, I could look at the queue, and I'd go back into the takeaway. By the time those people had got to the front of the queue, they didn't have to order, I'd already cooked it. And when it came to the restaurant, I very retentive. I looked at the orders, put them in the order, and yes, it might sound that you can't, but I did do it. But I will add to that, the difference between, as I see the professional chefs, is I never, because I loved what I did, it wasn't work. I just did it. But I didn't really take on the art of delegation, and that was my downfall. Should have delegated more.
How many places were there in the restaurant?
I think it was a 44 seater, but you could put 45. Yeah.
Gosh, that's big.
That's big, and I'll bring into this because Chris doesn't say a lot, although she's sitting beside me and nodding. But when we opened the restaurant, Chris was the manager there. She'd never done anything like that, but she's a very gifted businesswoman, and she knows how to go about things. And she got the, I'll go back to our opening night. Chris doubts herself, and she came through the takeaway. I'm busy. She said, John, could you just please give me 5 minutes just to get some drinks out? I said, no problem. So I said to Norman, I did delegate. I said, Norman, I'm going to do some drinks. So I go through. Well, that happened maybe for a couple of weeks, and then Chris was more organised. But it still happened. She came in a couple of weeks later and she said, could you give us a hand? Repeated. So I said, yeah, okay. I came through to the drinks. Might have mentioned, to be efficient in a kitchen, you have to have everything in the right place. You don't need to second guess where it is. So I go to the bar and I put my hand out to get whatever drink it is, and it's not there. So I looked and I thought, this isn't how I set it up. So I said, Chris, I said, this, things are not right here. She said, John, this is my bar. I'm left-handed. Work with it. So I did, and I knew who was manager.
So, John, do you still like cooking?
All the time. Yes.
Do you?
Yes, I do. Chris and I would say, are equivalent in cooking. I'd say that through the process of time, Chris is a good cook, but doesn't get the pleasure from it. I do.
Right.
Is that right?
We've done too much of it.
Final question.
Go on then.
If you want to cook a really nice fish meal for you and, say, your family, where do you buy your fish and how do you choose it?
Right. Okay. This is just a little guide to the general public, which is just my opinion. You have your supermarkets, anywhere that buys fish, but bear in mind that I have experience. You buy from your eye. If you don't like the look of something, don't buy it, because it won't be good, particularly with fish or shellfish. And latterly, in Mersey, I've found a wholesaler that I can go down, Chris and I go down, we can walk round and we can see the fish, and we'll say we'll have that or that or that. And so that's at the moment where I get the fresh fish. It is, it's a bit like the fish we used to buy, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, very much.
Yeah. So that's where we buy our fish.
We go to Mersey.
Mersey.
Thank you, John, very much.